From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It is midwinter. Many Americans in the cold dreaming of shedding bulky coats and living warm. But scientists are exploring the benefits of deep cold, freezing, and how to survive it. Studying frogs that freeze like popsicles for months, then hop back to life. People nearly frozen to death who have recovered. Experimental procedures to cool bodies so surgeons have more time to repair them. Athletes and their love of the cryo tanks to heal after a tough game. This hour On Point, the science of deep cold, of freezing. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Do you have a story of surviving extreme cold, of using deep cold to heal? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me first today from New York is Renee Ebersol, science writer and features editor for Audubon Magazine, author of the January 12th article in Outside Magazine, How the New Science of Freezing Can Save Your Life. You can link to her piece at our website, onpointradio.org. Renee Ebersol, thanks very much for being with us today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
We're going to go in a few minutes to one of the world's top experts on all this, known as Professor Popsicle, of course. But you're writing across a whole span of things, and you start out this really interesting piece with the story of a young woman who falls deep in a snowbank and stays there for hours in deep cold and survives. Tell us the story, if you would, of Christine Newman. What happened?
Yeah, so Christine Newman, she was up in Jaribaldi Provincial Park in British Columbia, and she went out at night thinking she was going to get an early start to see the sunrise, and she got into some trouble. She ended up falling into a tree well, and they didn't find her until about 9 o'clock the next morning. It was actually a miracle that they found her in the first place. They found her, and she was doing what's called agonal breathing, where she was like sort of – it's literally your last breath that you make – breath before you take – before you die. So they heard this sort of like groaning sound and rasping, you know,
you describe her
sound.
Face up, eyes very wide, typical of this state, and right at death's door.
Yes, literally. She was at death's door.
And survived. Why? How? And what did we learn from that?
Well, these bystanders found her, and they were really extraordinary because they thought to start giving her CPR, and they didn't give up. They fought for 2 hours giving her CPR until the search and rescue people could get there. And then the search and rescue people had to give her CPR for another 2 hours until they could get her to the hospital.
What is the learning from that?
The learning is these cases, they're out there. There's been many cases where people were able to – their metabolism slows to such a point where they're in that cold state that they can survive on just a tiny little bit of oxygen. Their brain isn't damaged. And if they can get to a hospital that has this life-saving technology, they can actually survive. They can be rewarmed and they can revive and they can go on to live normal lives.
Here's some tape from that. That was April 2014, Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, the story of Christine Newman, doctors who were involved in saving her.
The only reason that she's alive, with all of the things that she had, from a medical perspective, was because of the hypothermia.
These people never gave up hope. They kept on with the CPR.
We didn't know that this is something special. We just did what we need to do and what we thought is right.
New possibilities at the very, very cold edge of cold. Of course, you can go too far with it. We had this 24-year-old salon worker at a cryotherapy salon in Las Vegas last fall who froze to death in her own salon. Here's the report from ABC.
Chelsea Ake Salvacion was alone after hours at this Las Vegas cold therapy salon. Police say the 24-year-old manager stepped inside a cryotherapy chamber last week, running as cold as minus 240 degrees for a three-minute treatment. But her frozen body wasn't discovered until the next morning.
That went very wrong. Renee Ebersol, so what we're talking about here is insights into this very cold edge, though. You can go over that edge. People looking at how they can slow the metabolism to do interesting things in terms of surgery and more, and how we may be able to save people deeper in that slow metabolism than had been thought earlier?
Yes, that's true.
Give us Give us a sense of the range of things you're looking at here, in terms of humans, in terms of amphibians, in terms of how this may be applied in medical treatment.
Yeah, so this is, you know, in these human cases, it sort of reveals all sorts of things that can happen, medical treatments that people can use in order to stop a person from bleeding out on the operating table or going into cardiac arrest. If they can be put into a very, very, very cold state, they can stop the heart, literally suspend them in time, and give them life-saving treatment before they die. That's just extraordinary. That's new research that's happening now. Researchers have been studying frogs because they have this incredible ability to be able to freeze for 7 months at a time and then miraculously wake up and literally go off and hop to mate. They hop off to mate, you know, within a day. There are these cryotherapy chambers that people are using now in order to increase their performance as athletes. And there are people sometimes say they also help with wrinkles and, you know, help you lose weight. And people, you basically go into this cryotherapy chamber and they blast negative 264 degree Fahrenheit air at you for 3 minutes. And then when you come out of the chamber, you're supposed to be invigorated and endorphins firing. And it's a lot of people are trying this now. And that you alluded to one of these cases that went very badly in Las Vegas.
I mean, she just set the dials wrong and was in there all night, and that was the end of that. But there's this craze for cold and the things that might be done with it. Also, how it can be survived. Renee Ebersole writing about it in Outside Magazine this month. You can link to her big piece at our website, onpointradio.org. And one of the experts that you cite there is known as Professor Popsicle. That is actually his Twitter handle. Gordon Giesbrecht joins us right now, thermophysiologist, joins us from Winnipeg, Canada, professor of kinesiology and recreation management, University of Manitoba, co-author of Hypothermia, Frostbite, and Other Cold Injuries. He goes right into the cold himself and has brought back a lot of tremendous insight. Professor Giesbrecht, thank you so much for being with us today.
Hi, Tom and Renee. How are you doing?
Very well. What's the value that we find in studying this cold edge of what's survivable?
Well, the obvious one comes in the first story that Renee wrote about is, there was a time when we would have said, oh, if somebody's colder than 60 degrees Fahrenheit, for instance, at a core temperature, and their heart has stopped, don't bother because they're non-resuscitatable. But as we come across they're rare cases, but we've got a handful of cases now where the core temperature has been down, 60 or even slightly below that, and people have survived. And it's interesting that in many of these cases, well, some of these cases, it's actually the fact that the doctors where the patient was delivered, just didn't know what the knowledge of the day was, and so they just said, "Well, we've got a cold patient. Let's do some intensive care here and treat them," and then they've lived. We have two cases. Another one that was in the article, a girl in Edmonton. And also one in Regina, and I think both cases, the physicians who dealt with them, would not have heard this stipulation. And now, because we have these, really low cases now, I've been involved in writing several guidelines for treatment. And we basically now have taken away the low temperature threshold. And basically, as the title of the article is, you're not dead until you're warm and dead. Sometimes we do that, unless you really are cold and dead, and that is, if there's an obvious fatal injury, or if the body is frozen solid and you can't actually do CPR, well, then, and someone's been out there frozen for 2 days, then you might leave them. But
what's the key therapeutically to bringing someone back from that deep, deep edge of cold? Is it just doing CPR and warming them up and not quitting? Is there something more? What?
Well, in hypothermia, the thing that causes, clinical death would be your heart gets cold enough Generally, when it gets, you know, below 80 degrees, it is at risk of stopping eventually. And so the heart stops, you no longer have circulation, and if you're left like that, you'll die. The major problems when you have a decrease in blood flow is you now have no oxygen delivery to the brain, and the brain is the most sensitive organ. You know, when people are brought back, you really care about what's their brain function like. And so cold protects the brain from a lack of oxygen, and we'll call it hypoxia at this point.
How does cold do that? How?
Well, a number of things. First of all, is you decrease the temperature of any tissue, the metabolic or the oxygen requirements decreases.
Okay.
So the metabolic rate of that tissue decreases, therefore the oxygen requirement. So when you stop blood flow, you still have oxygen in that blood, and it will be used up, you know, as it's stagnant. And so the colder you get, the less the oxygen requirements are. And that, you know, that is used, you know, in the 60s. We had, before cardiopulmonary bypass machines, when they wanted to do a heart surgery, they would actually cool people down. I've quoted some studies done in the 60s where they cooled people down to a core temperature of, it's 9 degrees Celsius. Not sure what that is.
Very cold.
In the 50s,
yeah.
Fahrenheit. And that would allow them to stop the heart for 90 minutes. So you have that controlled situation that we've known about for decades, now being manifest. People are we've understood this for decades that you know, someone can be treated.
Yo, man, let's get out of here. Word to your mother.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about our growing understanding of how life interacts with freezing temperatures, from frogs frozen all winter to humans brought back from the deep freeze brink of death, sort of the power of frozen. Here's a little tape. This was just last February. 25-year-old Justin Smith had been outside for close to 12 hours in 5-degree temperatures in the snow in eastern Pennsylvania, almost lifeless. Doctors were able to bring him back. Here's his father and Justin talking about what happened when he woke up. This video from Lehigh Valley Health Network, which treated Justin.
It was probably March 5th, and he just opened his eyes. He turned his head and looked at me, and I couldn't believe it.
My first memory was waking up at Sierra Crest, and I saw my mom, my dad, my two sisters. I was pretty much out of it still, but I can remember visually seeing them both.
Survive that, and you get a soundtrack, it sounds like, right there. Renee Ebersole is writing about all this for Outside Magazine. Terrific piece. You can link to it at our website, How the New Science of Freezing Can Save Your Life. Gordon Giesbrecht is thermophysiologist, professor of kinesiology, recreation management, University of Manitoba, one of the world's leading experts in this cold, cold frontier of science. You can join us this hour. Do you have a story of surviving extreme cold? Have you seen the nearly frozen, nearly dead, brought back to life? Can you understand how a frog frozen all winter can just thaw out and hop away? And what's your question on the science of frozen life? Renee, Professor Popsicle, we asked our listeners on Facebook, what's the coldest temperature they'd ever experienced? And lots of people chipping in here. Andrew, negative 40. Janet, negative 40. Greg, negative 23 in Bethel, Maine. Keith, negative 35 in Kodiak, Alaska. Leslie, negative 52 in Fairbanks. That's getting way down there. And, of course, Ben wants to trump everybody. He says, minus 300 degrees. I was exploring Neptune's moon, Triton. Wandered too far from my stasis pod. He writes, okay. Over the top, Ben, but we've got it. Is there an outer limit to Gordon, to what humans can survive when they're up and moving?
Well, I think, you know, we've got these cryo tanks, which, you know, get down at below minus 200. So, you know, it all becomes a matter of how long you're in there.
But that's just like 2 or 3 minutes, right?
Well, that's right. And you can put up with anything for a short period of time. If you dip someone into liquid nitrogen, that would freeze immediately. But the air, obviously, if you are clothed, if you have dry clothing on, you on your feet and your hands and a toque on maybe on your head to protect frostbite of small body parts, you can survive a couple of minutes without frostbite, and you're certainly not going to become hypothermic in a couple of minutes in even minus 200 degrees.
We've got Ari in Vermont saying, living in Vermont and not seeing grass for months on end, it always amazes me how animals survive up here. That frogs freeze has always blown my mind. We'll look at that. Another listener says, these techniques are really exciting. We've all heard of people drowning in very cold water and recovering with no harm, not fully drowning, I guess, really cool stuff if it can be harnessed. We're right out on the edge of what's possible with the deep cold. We're going to hear in just a few minutes from a surgeon who is using this to slow things down and keep things going in the middle of deep, deep trauma to a body. Michael in Nashville, Tennessee is calling. Michael, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Tom. First-time caller, long-time listener.
Great to have you. What's your story?
Well, I wanted to share an experience from back in 1996. I was in the Special Forces Qualification Course doing training to become a medic. For those that don't know, a Special Forces medic is trained to the level of about a physician's assistant. However, we're also trained on blocks of independent surgery, anesthesia, dentistry, veterinarian skills, and the gamut of what we might see while we're downrange. So the story kind of took place in New York City while we were doing an internship. And it was a 6 weeks internship, and half of that time we were on the ambulances, and the other half we were actually in the hospitals going through the different clinics.
Take us to the case, Michael.
So this happened in the emergency room, and they had brought in a homeless guy. It was about 9 o'clock in the morning, and he was having agonal respirations. His body core temperature was about 72 degrees. He was severe bradycardic. His heart was just barely going. And the attending in the emergency room was like, looked at the four students that were there, and he's like, "Hey, you guys have a great opportunity here for training aid." So the attending kind of gave the patient to us, and the four of us went to work actively rewarming this guy. So we did everything that we could to rewarm him. We did a nasal gastric tube, and we were passing warm water down into his abdomen, into his stomach. We had warming blankets on him. We were passing warm IV fluids. We weren't going to warm him up too fast, but over the period of about 3.5 hours, we actually got his body core temperature all the way back up to about 94 when the guy started coming to.
Were they surprised at the hospital, Michael, when his eyes fluttered and he started coming to after that deep cold?
They were blown away. In fact, I think the attending thought he might get into some trouble, because what turned into a training aid, what was a training aid, turned into a real life-saving maneuver. So here these Green Beret medics, who couldn't know much, we rewarmed this guy, and now he's alive. So,
Michael, that is a great story, and I'm glad you shared it with us. Professor Popsicle, you're listening. Does that sound within the range of what you've seen possible?
Yeah, I mean, this is a great example of what happened decades ago. I mean, this is we're talking about cases here where there was actually no heart activity. But now, this story we just had now was, someone who actually had bradycardia, which is a slow heartbeat. And so he was breathing agonal, which is, kind of the end of life. But his heart was beating. And, we would say there's a pretty good chance that person should live if treated aggressively and correctly, which these medics obviously did. And that temperature, 72 degrees, is certainly survivable, as we've seen. And these are the kinds of things where that would have seemed miraculously, and the guy actually thought he might get in trouble for trying back then. Now I might end up in court testifying against someone for negligence if they didn't treat someone that way.
I mean, it's amazing how far it can go. We've seen these videos of fish frozen stiff, thrown in the water, and a few minutes later off they swim. We got a call from cold country, Circle, Alaska. Colleen is on the air. Colleen, I used to work up that way. That's cold territory. What's your story?
Definitely. Side note, hi there.
Hi.
The coldest I've been in is negative 68, but we think we've been in colder, but our thermometers are not adequate usually on the houses to gauge any colder. So I grew up along the villages along the Yukon River, one of them being Grayling, Circle's another, Chalkeetsuk was another. So I wouldn't want to say I was around 10 years old. We lived in the village of Grayling, and my dad ran a trap line with his buddy. They went out and checked their trap line and had a wolf that was frozen to death. They didn't even have to shoot it or anything like that. They put it on the sled, come back home. He comes inside. The wolf is still on his sled, and he comes inside to warm up. And in that time, the wolf started, you know, coming to and wakes up and is alive.
Oh, no.
And
oh,
ends up taking off.
Oh, and maybe in the cabin. That's an amazing story. Does it ring, Gordon Giesbrecht, there's testimony right from Circle, Alaska. Does it ring true to you?
Was the wolf inside or was outside when it woke up?
It was outside, presumably frozen to death on the sled behind the snowmobile.
So what would have? It was still cold out there. Why would it have come back, I wonder?
I can't explain.
I mean,
that's a great story, though. I mean, I believe it. I just can't explain it.
Colleen, we love the tale, and we appreciate your call from Alaska. Call again. I mean, you put yourself in these conditions, Gordon Giesbrecht. You go down into very cold conditions. Presumably, that's not just to see if you can survive. What's the edge of medicine that may be helped by this research?
Well, our own studies, of course, on humans are, you know, have to be ethically approved, so we don't bring anybody anywhere near severe hypothermia. Although we have cooled people more than any other ethically approved studies in the world, down to 33 and once to 32 degrees Celsius.
Wow.
What is that? That's down around 90 degrees Fahrenheit. And
it must be lower than that. 90 is hot.
Pardon?
90 is hot. Must be lower than that.
No, 90 Fahrenheit. Oh, sorry. I'm not sure what the Fahrenheit is, but down to 32 degrees, no, 90 degrees Fahrenheit.
No, that's a summer day. I'm sure that's not right, but I take your point. It's very cold.
Yeah. So 98.6 is normal, 37
oh,
degrees.
I see. Okay.
And,
okay.
So moderate hypothermia is 90 degrees.
Okay,
yeah, so
got it.
A,
I see.
It's
I
a
understand.
Warm summer day outside, but it's not so good
yeah,
inside your
right,
body.
Right, got it.
So down to about 90 degrees Fahrenheit.
I see, yeah.
And we actually did that to learn a lot about shivering. People thought that you couldn't shiver, and that's really not relevant here. But we did, you know, we learned a lot about rewarming people and different ways to get heat into the body. And those, then we tried to give that to the medical community so that when they get someone who is severely hypothermic and indeed below what we could ever study, but resuscitatable, we try to help with different methods that they could use, especially out in the field, because, you know, most, well, I guess there are people, homeless people who are found in the city who are 3 minutes from a, you know, ambulance ride to a hospital, but, the Anna Baggin homes of this world, the skier that was in Renee's article, she was, 5 hours before they were able to get her to a hospital, so it's important to have treatments that you can do out in the field.
Gordon Giesbrecht, please stand by in Winnipeg, Canada, and Renee Ebersole with us from New York. I want to go to Baltimore right now, and Dr. Sam Tischerman, professor of surgery at the University of Maryland School of Medicine. He's director of the Division of Critical Care, Trauma Education. He's the national principal investigator of clinical trials testing whether cooling patients with cold saline solution give surgeons more time to repair injuries, perhaps quite traumatic injuries. Dr. Tischerman, welcome to On Point. Thank you very much for being here.
Hi, thanks. Thanks for having me.
What kind of injuries are you working with?
Well, eventually we hope that we could use this idea of hypothermia for any kind of injury, but we're starting right now with patients with penetrating trauma, I mean stab wounds and gunshot wounds. And that's mainly because those are people we think we can save.
And how does cold come into play? So somebody comes into the hospital, they've got a bullet hole in their chest. I guess you're looking at cases of cardiac arrest. And then what?
Right. We're focusing on people who've had a cardiac arrest from they've just bled so much that the heart stops. And the problem in the trauma world is that if there's no blood in your bloodstream, CPR just doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that we have a race against time to be able to save these people and keep the brain, the heart, and all the organs resuscitatable. So the whole idea with the hypothermia is to rapidly cool them down and decrease the body's need for oxygen, because when they're in mm-hmm. cardiac arrest, there's no oxygen getting to tissues. So the lower the temperature is, the less the main organs, particularly the brain and the heart, need. And so hopefully it's basically buying time for the surgeons to stop the bleeding.
You're diving into this research. To what temperature do you expect to cool the bodies with the cold saline?
We're looking at cooling down to around 10 to 15 centigrade, which is around 50 or so Fahrenheit.
Wow.
So we don't want to freeze people, but we want to get pretty cold.
And how much more time might that buy you to go in and make the repairs that could allow them to come back to life or live?
Right now, we're hoping that we can buy 45 minutes to an hour. Cardiac surgeons use this kind of level of hypothermia all the time to do certain cases where they have to stop all the circulation to the body, and they'll do that for 45 minutes to an hour. We've pushed beyond that with some lab studies, but for a trauma surgeon, 5-10 minutes, a half an hour, 45 minutes is a lot of time to get a lot of work done to try to save these patients.
Renee Ebersole, you've talked with people about this work. I mean, this is raising a lot of excitement about the possibility of saving people that otherwise, forget it, there just wouldn't be time.
That's right. I mean, these people, they're at death's door, and it's new technology, and doctors who are trying to apply it and looking at things in new ways are really making great strides toward saving people who might never be savable.
Gordon Giesbrecht, there was a lot of controversy, and justifiably so. During World War II, the Germans, maybe the Japanese too, used prisoners of war and prisoners in Holocaust detention centers, concentration camps, to do experiments on very, very cold effects. How is our research different from that today? I hope very different.
Well, first of all, three main differences. And the first one is, of course, we're dealing with volunteers and not prisoners. The other thing, of course, is we're only cooling people down to the lower end of mild hypothermia, which poses no medical risks, as opposed to pretty much, I know there was I think it was 103 different people studied in Dachau over a series of experiments, and most of them eventually died in some of the experiments. And so, I mean, those were terrible, unethical, and the actual scientific rigor of the studies wasn't as great either. So for those three reasons, it's an interesting set of data that we kind of shy away from. But so we there's still work being done, but it's all done in safe conditions with volunteers.
If we can do this ethically, Sam Tischerman, Dr. Tischerman, you're talking about saving lives on a regular basis, and you're starting in a realm of real trauma, gunshot wounds, knife wounds.
Oh, absolutely. In the trauma world, there's a lot of excitement about that, because right now, maybe 5%, maybe 7, 10% of these people live. So we're talking about less than 1 in 10 living. So we've got to do something better. And this is an exciting way that we might be able to save these patients.
Has a magic can be controlled. Stronger than one, stronger than 10, stronger than 100 men.
This On Point podcast is made possible by Squarespace. If you have a passion that you obsess over, if it keeps you up at night, if you live for it, you should show it off. With easy-to-use tools and templates, Squarespace websites help you capture every detail of what drives you. Because if it's worth the effort, it's worth showing to the world. Start your free trial today at squarespace.com. When you're ready to purchase, use the one-word offer code ONPOINT to save 10%. You should. Squarespace.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about our growing understanding of how life interacts with freezing temperatures, from frogs frozen all winter to humans brought back from the deep freeze brink of death to very cold, saline and more being used in a surgical situation to give more time to surgeons to save lives, almost the power of frozen. Renee Ebersole has been writing it all up for Outside Magazine. She joins us today from New York. Gordon Giesbrecht is with us, top thermophysiologist with us from Winnipeg, Canada, and University of Manitoba, cold country. And Dr. Sam Tischemann is with us from Baltimore, University of Maryland School of Medicine. He's pushing the frontier of what is understood about how cold can be used to help in surgery. Renee's piece in the magazine, How the New Science of Freezing Can Save Your Life. And we're looking at that. Of course, all kinds of applications here. We asked people, what's the coldest you've ever been? Mike says negative 57 at South Pole Station, Antarctica. Not everybody lives in cold country. Jay sends us a funny one with a wink emoticon here. 65 degrees in Brownsville, Texas, thank you. Not that cold. Megan in Kent, Ohio, you've been listening. What's your question, Megan?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my question. My question for your panel of experts is, how does the medical community protect the soft tissue in the extremities of people and at the same time use these life-saving properties of cold?
I'll take that right to Sam Tischemann. Sam?
So for us, we don't think it'll be a big problem because we're not keeping the patients that cold for that long. Certainly, you're right, if we kept somebody down at this kind of temperature for a long period of time, or we put a lot of ice packs around them and left them there, we'd have skin issues. But for the kind of time frame we're talking about, and from the experience of cardiac surgeons doing this sort of thing, that's not really been much of a problem.
Gordon Giesbrecht, what about you? I mean, you've done a lot of this yourself, jumping into ice water. What about soft tissue and extremities?
Well, I think it's important to note that people might think about freezing people, therefore frostbite, therefore injury. Dr. Tischemann has explained, they're cooling people maximally or minimally down to 50 degrees Fahrenheit, which is a long ways from freezing. So, So there's no actual freezing or ice formation in the tissues. And so, for the period of time that they're doing this, we would expect no problems.
Paul in Beverly, Massachusetts. Paul, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Quick question. Do humans have natural blood antifreeze like wood frogs and cold water fish?
Natural blood antifreeze. Renee, you wrote about this in the piece. Gordon Giesbrecht, what does that mean? The frogs that can be frozen stiff. The case of the amphibian popsicle, Renee's headline rolls. How do they do that? And if they can, why can't we? Gordon,
What your caller's talking about is with frogs, they have this adaptation where they're able to pump their bodies full of glucose as they're cooling down, and the glucose acts as a natural antifreeze. Gordon, maybe you can pick up there to speak
How does
about
it work,
humans.
Gordon? Yeah.
Well, to not lose track of the original question, the bottom line is humans just don't have that that adaptation. So, that's why we have frostbite. You know, if the temperature gets well below 32 degrees, we'll actually get ice formation because we have a lot of water content in our cells, and it freezes, forms ice formation. So, and that is what the one of the major things that the tree frog and other hibernators can do is they have these cryoprotectants in their blood that we don't have.
Is it imaginable that we could introduce those into the human circulatory system one day to give us more endurance in cold resistance?
I don't know. Maybe Dr. Tischemann can answer that one.
Sam,
it's certainly possible. I mean, it's interesting. This discussion reminds me of a meeting we had maybe at least 10 years ago, we brought in some people who had done some work with like animals like the tree frogs or diving seals to see what we might learn from these kind of animal studies that could help us with the humans. Right now, little of that is really translated, but it's certainly possible, and certainly we'd like to be able to push this frontier further down the road.
There's a frontier to share with frogs, very cold frogs that warm up and hop away. Mary in Milwaukee, thanks for calling, Mary. You're on.
Well, this sounds like a scene out of the Alien series where they would freeze the people on board the ships and then transport them off to another location. And, of course, I think Tommy sort of stole my thunder about how our – is this something they're planning on doing in the future so they can send colonies of people millions of miles, you know, in light years into the space and to planets and galaxies? Is that – I mean, is that even a potential? I don't know how long people could stay frozen in this state, but –
Gordon, have you speculated?
No, I haven't. That is certainly the stuff of science fiction, as far as I'm concerned. We're a long, many, many, many steps away from that.
Just not out there yet, but of course, the human mind always imagines the possibility.
Absolutely. You can imagine people sitting at in think tanks trying to figure out how that might happen. But that's a long ways away.
I mean, we've got so many people who are athletes jumping into cryo tanks these days. Gordon Giesbrecht saying this helps them heal faster. Have you seen evidence of that?
Well, that's an interesting. The cryo tank is a new sort of more extreme example of what we've been doing for decades. And people either with an injury or right after extreme workouts is getting into, you know, applying ice packs or getting into cold water. And Renee does a great job of summarizing some of the work. You know, there's some claims that I, you know, about weight loss, which I don't think 2 or 3 minutes is not going to do anything, and increasing oxygen and nutrients to the blood because it's pooling in the core, that's probably not the case. There is some evidence that it will increase or sort of decrease inflammatory markers in the blood. But there's, you know, it's still mixed out there as to whether there's actual evidence that it actually decreases muscle damage. So there's a long ways from, you know, having a measurable effect on inflammatory substances in the blood to actually having a decrease in muscle damage. So there's still some work to be done, for sure.
A lot of professional athletes really into it lately. Here's a little ABC report from last year looking at a new service the Cleveland Cavaliers were offering their players.
As a player, LeBron James has ice water in his veins. This might be why. As this video shows, the Cavaliers now one of a growing number of clubs offering cryotherapy to their players.
We've got Angie McRobbie with us from Berea, Ohio, massage therapist at Synergy Sports Therapy. They've consulted with the Cavaliers on all this. Angie, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Tom.
So what exactly do athletes do, pro players do, when they get in this cryo environment? How long and what?
You are in the cryo tank. Well, first we cool it to a negative 70 degrees Celsius, and that is when they go ahead and get in the cryo tank. They do have either gloves or socks on their hands or their feet, because when you get cold, was stated that the blood does want to go, your fight or flight system wants to bring the blood to your core. So you want to protect the hands and the feet because you're in there for 2.5 to 3 minutes.
70 degrees below zero Celsius. What is that Fahrenheit, roughly?
It goes down to about, because when you're in the full cryo in the 3 minutes, it goes down to negative 170 degrees Celsius, which is about negative 274 degrees Fahrenheit.
Now your head is sticking out of this thing. It's two
yes.
or 3 minutes, and what kind of benefits do the athletes tell you they feel?
Some will come in before their game or their event that they're doing, because they feel like they have a big boost of energy. And so they feel like they perform better, and then they will come in afterwards for the recovery part, and they just say that they feel better, and it's honestly more comfortable than being in an ice bath for 15 to 20 minutes.
Yeah. Sam Tishman, what do you make of that? I mean, many of us have experienced maybe going from a sauna into a real cold water plunge and the kind of thrilling sensation that comes with that. Is it as simple as that, or possibly something else going on here, Sam?
That's not really my area of expertise, but it's interesting. My guess is going to be a lot of just their feeling, as you say, not necessarily scientific. But there is, you know, some work on things like heat shock, cold shock proteins, things like that, and you might stimulate something that then prepares the body better for the next stress, whatever that is. So, I mean, there may be something scientific to it.
Angie, is it mainly a thrill you're giving people, you think, that plunge in the ice water? Or I know, you know, your thing is to just run the service and let people have it. But how do you interpret what's going on?
Because what they're saying is that it takes your body to come out of an actual ice bath. It can take the muscles longer to recover. You're instantly warm as soon as you come out because it's a dry cold with the nitrogen gas than the wet cold, where it's actually affecting the skin mm-hmm. more than the actual properties within the body. So they feel like they can go right into training right afterwards, where in an ice bath, there takes a little bit more recovery time to warm up the body.
Renee, did you talk with people who have done it and had their testimony?
I did it. I actually went into one of them, and it was the coldest 3 minutes of my life. it was really cold. You know, people tell me that, never mind the other cosmetic benefits that people sometimes promote, the chances it maybe reduces inflammation, it helps athletes with faster recovery. But it is worth noting that it's not FDA approved, and there hasn't been a lot of research on cryotherapy, so it's something that really needs to be studied more deeply. I did not feel that state of, like, you know, energy and endorphins. I actually felt pretty tired after I was done.
Okay. Didn't go euphoric for you, but does for others, and they come back. Angie McRobey in Berea, Ohio at Synergy Sports Therapy. Angie, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
Gordon, what about... Yes, please.
Sorry, I could add, one of the actual really practical things that Angie spoke about there is, getting in an ice bath sucks. It is very cold and uncomfortable. And, if you can get the same effect, with 2 or 3 minutes in super cooled air that you would get in 15 to 20 minutes of sitting in an ice bath, mm-hmm. Regardless of, they're not miraculous things that are happening, but if you can get the same effect with, it would seem to me that the stress just going through 2 to 3 minutes in the cold air would not be as uncomfortable as getting in an ice bath. No question about that.
So watch your time, and it may pay off. What about, we all know the stories of Ted Williams and others who have actually had their bodies or their heads, their brains, deep frozen in the hope of reanimation at some point. Does that even theoretically sound possible to you, Professor Giesbrecht?
That's really into the science fiction as far as I'm concerned. Freezing the whole body is out there as it is, trying to think that they'll be able to bring them back. We have not solved the problem of how do you, the problem with the amphibians able to freeze and hibernate is because they've got the cryoprotectant, and we certainly haven't, which prevents freezing of water in the tissues and forming ice crystals. So I'm not sure that we've solved that problem. So, for the people whose whole bodies have been frozen, and then you take several steps further when you go to folks who've just, just have their heads frozen, because the proposed solution for them is that by the time they bring them back, they'll have the ability to grow a whole new body to the head. So I don't waste much time trying to analyze whether that's possible or not.
Too far out. Just too far out. But people want to believe, want to try. Troy in Madison, Wisconsin. Troy, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
From my understanding, viruses and some bacteria and stuff don't do well at cold temperatures. So I was wondering if there's been any experiments on treating people with illnesses by freezing or lowering the body temperature for a time.
Dr. Tischerman, I mean, we're all aware that you get into an operating theater and temperatures are kept fairly low to discourage the growth, I guess, of bacteria and viruses. But what about deep cold and prevention of those potential problems in treatment?
Well, actually, that is an interesting point. In fact, for the operating room and patients in the perioperative period, there's decent data that if they get a little cool, they actually do worse and can make it more infections. But on the other hand, there has been some work done on patients with what we call sepsis, which is a very severe infectious state for a patient, where some cooling may be beneficial, or at least maybe more aggressive controlling of temperature, not letting somebody have a bad fever. So it's certainly a controversial area, but it's an interesting point.
I mean, Renee, after looking at this whole range of things that people are into, we've often thought of cold as simply something to fear. You're describing a range of areas in which it's something to use, to wield.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it can be, ironically, it can be a protectant if you're in a situation in the outdoors where if someone finds you, you know, and they know what to do, you get to a hospital where they know how to treat you, it can actually be the thing that saves your life. And there's, you know, all this new technology that's being developed based on cold and extending the limits of human survival. You know, it really is an exciting time for what people can do in research and medicine.
So many stories that we haven't been able to get to. Alexander telling us had a butterfly chrysalis in the deep freeze in the freezer for a year, brought it out, opened up, and flew away. That's amazing. Renee Ebersole, we appreciate your opening up this vista for us in your piece, How the New Science of Freezing Can Save Your Life, in Outside Magazine. There's a link at our website, onpointradio.org. Renee, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Dr. Sam Tischerman, the University of Maryland School of Medicine, joining us today from Baltimore. Good luck with your research. We'll be watching, Doctor. Thank you for being here.
Well, thanks very much. Good talking to you.
You too. And Gordon, Professor Popsicle Giesbrecht in Winnipeg, Canada. Stay warm, sir. Cold enough to do your research, and thanks a lot for your insights today.
You're welcome. As we say when people leave our lab, keep cool, but don't freeze.
Okay, keep cool, but don't freeze. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.